Listen up. We think we know what we're talking about. It's Webcomics Weekly with Brad, Dave, Chris, and Scott.
Oh, good evening. It is with that inaugural belch that we open this week's episode of Webcomics Weekly, the amazing podcast of indeterminate length. I stole that from CNET. About the craft, the gravitas, the chutzpah of making and producing your own comics and comic strips for the web. I am one of your hosts, Scott Kurtz. You may know me from my hack piece of dick and fart joke tripe, PvP, which you can find at pvponline.com. To my left, oh, I'm sorry, to my right is, is my buddy Christopher Straub.
Hey, you guys. Hey, what's up? I didn't want it to be that genuine, but it came out that way. You may recognize me shortly from the newly rebranded and relaunched
StarSlit.com.
And sitting across the table from me is a friend I like to call Brad Geiger because it's his name.
Hey, and I do Evil Inc. It's at evil-comic.com. And sitting slightly adjacent to me and slightly askew from where he usually sits is Mr. Dave Kellett.
Well, wouldn't you say it's more catty corner? I don't know if it's a
joke. Yeah, I was going to say catty corner.
Catty corner works.
Anyway, I'm Dave Kellett. I'm one of the two Half Pixel members not invited to Harvard, and I do the comic Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com.
And then sitting slightly across the country...
A little bit.
In the is it cold in Seattle tonight?
You know, I'm actually in Canada visiting friends. So.
Oh my God!
I'm joining you internationally.
Holy! Wow. I think we're breaking a couple laws here, right? At least one.
Yeah, this all this hot webcomics info has to go through customs.
Well, isn't there a law about transporting a Greek man over international lines? I mean, I would imagine that.
So this is joining us in from Canada, Jim DeMonakis, the proprietor of is it called the Comic Stop?
Yep, the Comic Stop
in Linwood, in the Seattle area, and also the head muckety muck over at our favorite convention of the year, the Emerald City Comic Con.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you very much. Really excited to have you guys back again this year. The show is shaping up quite well, coming up seemingly way too shortly. But, you know, April 4th and 5th of 2009, check us out at EmeraldCityComicCon.com.
And other than the present four of us, the superstars that we are, you've got a lot of good guests coming out.
Yeah, it ain't bad. You know, we put a nice little shindig together. we've actually become quite a, you know, like I've always been a fan of webcomics and being able to get you guys out. And, like, we've actually just started building, like, much more of a webcomics. Like, the show now actually has an entire section of people that are all webcomics guys. So, you know, the four of you gentlemen, there's the Penny Arcade guys, Questionable Content, Unshelved, Dave Malky over at Wondermark, Danielle Corsetto, a whole mess of talent.
Yeesh, I hate all those people.
It's just going to be an awkward weekend.
Yes.
Well, listen, before we get too far into the conversation so that you guys can check it out while we're talking with Jim, because we wanted to have Jim on tonight to talk specifically about planning and building and holding conventions. But you can check out the website. It's all one word, EmeraldCityComicCon.com. And then his store website, comicstoponline.com. So while we're talking, you can check out the site specifically for Emerald City Comic Con, because I think that's what we'll be focusing on mostly tonight. And Jim, because we love the show, but also I think it's kind of fascinating for creators like ourselves to sort of hear the hows and whys and the nuts and bolts of comics convention planning. Like, can you give us the scoop on how and why you go from that, hey, it might be fun to host our own comics convention, to a year later when you go, buh, why did we decide to do this? Like, how did that first year happen?
So for me, how it happened was, so I opened my first store in 2000, the year 2000. In the year 2000.
In the year 2000. Sorry.
So I opened my first store, and I started started going out to conventions, to other shows, and I would come back to Seattle, and we would have our own. There's a little show here. It would be one of those, kind of like a long box show, right? Like, you know, it's a kind of show that, you know, a bunch of dealers, a couple of guests, a couple hundred people. Everyone had a good time. You know, they'd happen like quarterly. But, you know, I would come back and I noticed, like, I mean, the Seattle area for us, it supported five comic book stores within like a 2-square-mile radius. I mean, we're talking, there's a really good comic book community and no convention to reflect that. So after a couple years of having the store, I was just getting ready to open my second store, and I was talking to my partners, who I own the stores with, and I was like, you know, and this also came from a lot of, you know, I had sick, like, complaints from the dealers and the people who were at the smaller show saying, you know, we don't know why, like, you know, there can't, like, why is there not more advertising for the show? Why is there not this? Why is there not that? And I was like, well, you know, it doesn't seem like it would be all that hard to put together a convention. And I literally had turned to my partners being like, you know, we should do a convention. How hard could it be? And, you know, they have never let me live those words down to this day. And to be honest, like, it's not hard. It's just a lot of work, you know? I mean, that's really what it comes down to is it's not hard work. It's just you got to kind of bust your ass for quite a while to make it happen. So the next step was, you know, just kind of pulling the trigger. We're like, okay, well, let's do this thing. So I knew a lot of guys. I'd become friends with quite a few creators. And I sort of called in literally, like, every favor I had. Like, I was friends with Eric Larson from Savage Dragon. I was friends with Jim Mahfood and Derek Robertson and just, like, a bunch of guys who I was like, listen, I never ask you for anything, and I'm going to pay for you to come out, so it shouldn't be a big deal. Will you come to my convention? And I came up with the name, Emerald City Comic Con. A lot of people don't know that Seattle's nicknamed the Emerald City. A lot of people are like, what's your deal with Wizard of Oz? And I'm like, well, you know, the Tin Man is hot. But, like, you know, so I was like, the Emerald City Comic Con, we just kind of, and we started, we put together, you know, a really fun guest list, and we found a nice venue that was able to support. We did about 50,000 square feet. Every one of those dealers who were at that other show, I approached them, and I was like, well, you know, now's the time to, you know, put up or shut up. Like, you complain, you want another show. Well, here I am, so I need you to kind of make good on your word and come in and exhibit. And so they did, and we had a really great show. The first year we did, for a one-day show, we did 2,500 people through the door.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. So, and it's grown ever since. Like, our show that we just had this past year in May was 10,000 people. And, you know, we expanded to 2 days after a couple years. And, you know, all we do, what we do every year is just try to, like, you know, we look at our guest list and we try not to, we try to give people a good variety so that if you're into web comics, if you're into indie comics, if you're into mainstream comics, there's sort of something for everybody. Plus, we always do, like, some awesome media guests, like Will Wheaton was out last year. He's coming again this year. We usually have, like Ray Park is coming out to do some promotion for G.I. Joe, and, you know, everyone knows him from Star Wars as Darth Maul, and Jewel State from Serenity and Firefly and Stargate. So there's all these cool people like that. Also, in addition to putting together a comic book show, we want to be able to, you know, cover some of the fun sci-fi bases, because we're all fans of Battlestar, we're all fans of, you know, shows like that, and we want to have those guys to add to the show, not take away from it. I think a lot of shows end up being so focused on other things that you lose the feel of a comic book show. Here it's like, well, there's comic books on every one of those TV shows. There's that connection to all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've got a question.
Yeah.
How did you guys make the decision to go from a one-day convention to a two-day convention? I mean, that had to have been a little bit of a leap of faith.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so we did the show for the first year, and like I said, it was like about 2,500 people, and then we did the show the second year, and it didn't grow dramatically. Actually, we got about 3,000 people, so I mean, which is, you know, definitely no complaints. But what we saw was that after everyone did the first show and every single person wanted to sign up again for the second show, all of a sudden, literally within a year, we were completely out of floor space. And in addition, with the size, like, because we tend to be like, our guest list becomes like stupid quick. Like, it becomes like we have like 100 people on our guest list. And people are like, I don't even have the time to see every single one of these guys. So, so for us, we were like, well, we really need to find a way to expand this. And at first, we looked to see if we could just expand the show floor or just so we could get some extra space. But we're dealing with the, what most people would know is basically the Seahawks Stadium. They have a little event center next door, and that's where we had the show for the first 5 years. It wasn't until last year we actually moved to the Washington State Convention Center, which is our new home now. But they had sort of limited facilities, so we were able to get to expand only if we were able to sign a contract that took us to take up the space for more than one day. Because one of the it's not really a secret, but as a show organizer, one of your big problems is actually getting dates. That's why we've bounced around so much, like, every year. We started our first show was first weekend of February. Then it was last weekend of February. Then it was March. Then it was April. This past year it was May. Now we move back to April, and I just got my 2010 dates, and we're going to be in March again. So...
Okay.
We were able to bounce around the spring, which is the area we want to be in, at least in the time of year we want to be in. And thanks to Wizard for, you know, like, not being able to run a convention and get myself.
Hey, what goes through your mind, Jim, when you see that Wizard is dropping all these conventions or postponing them?
Yeah.
Good riddance. Whoa, Jim, easy. Good riddance. Come on.
Man, why would you say that thing? Well, you know, that was an interesting morning. Like, I woke up and I saw that Wizard LA thing, and I was like, oh, my God. That is, like, I mean, honestly, quite unexpected, considering that show was less than 2 months away.
Right.
And at first they announced that they canceled it, right? They canceled that, canceled Texas, and then they kind of went back and were like, no, we postponed LA, but we canceled
Texas.
And I don't know what postpone means. Like, are they going to do it in the fall? Does that mean we're not going to get a Wizard LA show until 2010? I mean, I don't really know. I mean, but for me, I saw what was nice for me, I guess, is that it opens up a nice gap between the only other West Coast show in the spring is WonderCon, which is a great show. I actually really enjoy WonderCon.
Right.
But it would have been WonderCon last weekend of February, Wizard LA 2 weeks later, and Emerald City 2 weeks later. So that's a lot of West Coast shows. Some of the dealers really like it because they could drive from show to show, and they could actually, especially people who travel nationally, you got to think, there's a lot of different factors, right? For us, there's some dealers who are like, cool, I can do Wizard LA and then drive up to Seattle, spend a week, and do another show and justify the cost because that's 1 3-day show and 1 2-day show.
Right.
So right. In a way... like, there's all these kind of hidden factors that people don't realize. Now there's a lot of dealers who are like, well, I was planning on doing that. Now I'm not. So I haven't had anybody cancel, but then you have people who are planning on doing two shows, and all of a sudden they don't do either. So I lose out, and Wizard, even though, like, they're not doing their show, you know, technically would lose out because those guys are now not doing the show. Mm. But, you know, for me, I just was like, well, politically correct. I was not a fan of the Wizard LA show. I'd gone last year and I'd gone the year before, and it was just not a very well-run show, and which is completely opposite of, like, Chicago, which is quite, like, you know, it's still quite popular and very well attended. And mm-hmm. it makes you wonder what the disconnect was. You know, is it just a coast thing? Is it like
no, I'll tell you. Thing? I'll tell you right now what the disconnect is, Jim, and I'll say it so that you don't feel like you're the only one maybe making a comment. But, you know, I've been to Wizard World Texas a couple times. I know that Chris has even been to Wizard World Texas.
Yeah.
But, you know, in addition to the show being more about the big guests they can bring in, like, they'll get a Kevin Smith, they'll get a Joss Whedon, they'll get maybe a Grant Morrison or Jim Lee, you know. And then everyone else is there because they're paying, and they paid, and they got you paid for your booth, set up at your booth. We're not here to take care of you. Is basically the way they treat the people that exhibit. And I know that firsthand because as someone who's exhibited at the Wizard World Texas show, that's how I was treated. And on top of that, I went the last year that they had it last year to simply I paid for tickets to show up and pick up some stock of skull plushes that were at a retailer that I know in Des Moines. They were attending the show, and they brought the extra plushes to the show, and I told them I would come to the show and pick them up rather than have him try to find me. So I actually paid the entrance fee, which was exorbitant, to get in and just pick up some stock. And as we were waiting in line for the doors to open, it was during a weekend here in Dallas where the Cowboys were playing the Redskins, which is a huge rivalry.
Yeah.
And so you have all these Dallas locals waiting in line, and as the doors open, the guy running the Wizard show runs the front of the line, starts clapping his hands and go, "Way to go, Redskins, way to go," and just starts screaming and clapping his hands and screaming Redskins. And it upset a lot of people, and I didn't understand the mentality behind that. Like, you're a guest in a city, you're addressing a local, clientele, and, maybe he thought he was being funny, but it was obvious right away that nobody was amused, you know, and some people were even upset. So, why would anyone like attending a show like that? You know,
yeah.
It's so
out of the way to alienate the people who are keeping you in business.
Exactly.
Look, Jim, is that guy alive? Did he make it out of there? Okay.
Yeah, he did.
But Jim, you and I saw each other at the LA Wizard World, and I remember we chatted about it there. But my feeling about LA is, and for whatever you think about LA, there's no shortage of people that are interested in or love comics in Los Angeles. That is not a problem. It's a multi-million population city. And somehow Wizard was able to muster the feeling of a high school career day in creating a comic convention in Los Angeles. Like, you would walk around, and literally the feeling, just because the whole mood of the convention was like, "Hi, we're Marvel Comics. Are you interested in a career with us? Hi. Hey, we're IDW Publishing. Hey, we're SLG.
Did you get any free yo-yos or T-shirts or notepads that
say the logos on? You know what I got? I got a lot of stress balls. You walk around. You get a DC label stress ball.
Matter.
No, but it's when you walk around, I'll only say two, but when you walk around like an Emerald City Comic Con or even a big one like San Diego, you feel the energy, and even on some levels, you feel the love of the people that work on it. When I talk to you at Emerald City Comic Con, you're busy as heck, but you can tell that you're excited about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I'm hugely stressed. I feel like, you know, on the day of the show, I'm completely, like, you know, being pulled in a million different directions. But, like, I have a smile on my face because I'm like, man, this is awesome. Because, you know, the secret to the success of Emerald City is that I put a convention together that I want to go to. And I'm an average dude. Like, there's nothing special about me. There's just, like, this is the kind of show that I would want to go to. Hey, it turns out a whole lot of other people want to go to that same show.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's like, the simplest thing. It's just, like, I get guests that I want to see. I get publishers and dealers, and they have stuff that I would want to buy. And we get all this stuff together, and we do fun events that I would want to go to. And you put it out there, and it's like, hey, it turns out everybody else wants to do fun stuff, too. So let's, you know.
Well, that's very similar to the advice that we give web cartoonists. You know, we always tell people, do the web comic that you would want to read, because you'll be surprised, as weird as you think it is, other people want to read it, too.
Exactly.
You know, Jim, I've got a
question. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead and follow that up.
No, all I was going to say is, like, so, yeah, and it's not like, you know, I don't have some kind of, like, big personal philosophy or this and that, you know. And people are always like, well, how many guests do you have until you close your guest list? And I'm like, well, I literally actually kind of, like, look at the guest list, and I just closed it, like, a few weeks ago. And I was like, I just look at the guest list until I'm like, I feel like this is a complete show. This is, like, enough people, it's enough whatever, that this show is now the Emerald City Comic Con. And I'll have guys email or whatever or call and be like, hey, I want to come to the show. And I'm like, I would love to accommodate you. Like, I'm either sold out or I just can't. Like, and we're talking guys who, I mean, and she agreed to come next year, but I got an email from Joe Chen, who does the covers to Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all this other cool stuff. And I'm like, I would love to be able to have Joe Chen this year. There's nothing, like, I think she's great. She's a great artist. I want her to come. I have sold out of my artist alley. I don't actually even have tables for someone else to sit. So, and I closed my guest list. I'm like, I'm sorry, we're good. If you want to sign up for 2010, here are the dates. And she's like, yeah, let's just do it from now. So, because I'm really sorry I couldn't come in earlier to get into 2009. I'm like, great, let's do it.
Well, so, that actually leads me into my question. And that is, it's an etiquette question. Because I sent a few emails, and as a creator, you always feel awkward asking to be invited as a guest. But since we've got somebody representing, you know, the other side, is it proper form to write a convention promoter and ask to be invited as a guest?
No, I don't think so. Because, you know, for me, I don't know everybody, right? And so the people who tend to email you are people you've actually generally not had any contact with. So a lot of times someone will email you out of the blue and be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I would totally love to have you. And if it's within your budget and you're within your scope, you're like, great, let's do it. Otherwise, you're just like, you know what? I'm sorry. It's not going to work out. Or, you know, depending on what you're able to accommodate, there's some guys where I was just like, you know what? If you make your way out to the show, not on my expense, but if you want to come, I will comp you space, which is already, like, you know, which is a nice expense to not have to worry about.
Right.
So on some people, it's like, oh, yeah. Or other people are just like, yeah, I will come for just, you know, airfare, hotel. That's my thing. It's like, all right, well, we'll work it out. And whether I can work it out or not, I don't feel it's poor form. It's just I think it's also how you approach it. Because there's some people who have approached me with sort of that air of like, you know, you're kind of lucky that I'm talking to you. So you want me as a guest? And I'm like, you know, you can go pick up a rope.
Are you talking about kind of like when you're driving a guest back to the hotel after picking him up at the airport and that guest turns to you and says, I think I should draw the program cover next year?
Yeah, you know, like, and then those people never, like, I never talk to them again.
Yeah, why would you? They're a bunch of assholes.
Fucking douches is all I have to say.
That's what I did to Jim.
Hey, but then you drew it. I'm going to try that this year.
I actually did draw it, though.
That's true, actually, because I'm a sucker. I was like, yeah, whatever. And that's actually the cool thing. Like, for me, I just want stuff that's awesome. Like, I like awesome. I'm a big awesome fan. So, like, when Scott was like, you know what, let's do something really cool, and we talked about it, and he ended up doing this thing where basically Skull took the place of, it was like a King Kong cover, you know,
yeah.
It was basically Skull would be King Kong, and Cole was flying the little biplane, and I'm just like, great, we'll slap it all over, like, you know, so like 7,000 program guides had like Scott's art on it. I was like, yeah, I'm totally awesome with that. Well,
and,
like,
and
there's other shows or
too.
Other places that are like, well, if it's not done by like some guy who's working for Marvel and DC, and I have nothing against Marvel and DC. I have great relationships with both companies, and if you know, looking at our guest list, it runs the gamut. I have tons of guys who work for those guys. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, you know, what's going to fit? And we have this cool theme, like, you know, once a year with Emerald City that we do, like, sort of monsters attacking the Space Needle, just because, you know, outside of Seattle, like, we can do stuff with, we had a limited edition print last year that featured Tim Sale. And he drew the Hulk at the Pike Place Market. Well, the Pike Place Market's not very well known outside of Seattle. You know, people may have heard of it, but generally, like, you know, when you see it, you're like, okay, it just says public market. It's just, you know, but for locals, that print sold out in 15 minutes. We did 100 of them, and we sold out in literally 15 minutes. It was like a mob. It was crazy. And
the reason, I got to tell you, I'll be really honest with you, Jim, the reason why I was so brazen enough to ask is because before I even got invited to the con, I was aware of the Emerald City con because you always had the coolest indie guys doing your program covers. Like, I mean, I guess Larson's not very indie, but like Larson did one and Stan Sakai did one.
Yep.
Right? And Powell did one.
Eric Powell.
Yeah.
And then the following year, it was you. And then the year after, we had Michael Golden, and he did a non-superhero cover for the program guide. And then last year was Ryan Otley from Invincible, who did the program guide cover. And this year is still a surprise, but...
Oh, you'll tell us after the podcast, though, right?
Yeah, I can tell you after
the podcast.
But, and, you know, and here's where I try out Scott's technique. Well, I didn't want to sing, but I'm really excited about that Sheldon cover.
It's on record now. It's recorded. You have to.
It's public, right, Jim? I mean, I've made it public, Jim. So we got to go forward with it, right?
this podcast is a matter of public record now.
Jim,
it's notarized. Weekly.
Jim gets really awkward, and he feels like, ah, damn it, now I got it. Yeah, that's right, Dave. And then it cut to later when he calls Bill Watterson and says, I'm sorry. No Calvin and Hobbes. Maybe next year.
I got you ordered out of this weird podcast thing, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, you know how it is. Like, yeah.
And then Watterson shakes his head in the air and says, kill it! Third time this year!
And then just puts another little jar of urine up on a shelf.
Exactly. I was going to say, I'm going to move into a cave inside of this cave.
What did you say last night at dinner, Chris, when you saw that Watterson had written the cul-de-sac foreword?
The foreword? Oh, I don't remember.
You were like, where'd he find this guy? Or something like that.
I don't know what you said. I don't remember.
Nah, it was funny.
It was funny if you were there. Watterson is a hermit.
Yeah.
That was the other.
Jim, we were...
Oh, go ahead.
No.
Go ahead. No, Scott.
No, David.
All right. I'm going to ask an uninteresting question then.
Right.
So you're starting either your first con or, you know, you're a couple years in. Do you as an organizer ever go to the city of Seattle or the Chamber of Commerce and say, hey guys, how about ponying up a little something with the money than the tourists that I'm bringing into Seattle? Like, is that possible for you at this point, or was it ever, or does Seattle care at all?
So it's funny, right? Like, I have tried. You have to be a much bigger show, or you have to be a not-for-profit show to get yourself some of those Seattle City dollars. So, to start with, if you're not for profit, there's a lot of breaks. You can get breaks on printing. You can get breaks on the rate you pay at the convention center. You can get quite a few breaks because you're doing things, you know, that your show's not for profit. You're like there to support the arts or, you know, whatever else. And then it's size wise, where for us, it's not till this year that hotels have been able to give us breaks because we've been able to prove that we bring in X amount of, I forget what the technical term is. It's something like pillow nights, something like that. It sounds vaguely dirty, but it's like how many nights each guest actually stayed, you brought to the city of Seattle. So you could get one hotel room, but it actually, if you're in Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, then you've gotten three nights out of it. And if you can prove that you're bringing in X amount, 500, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000, that in turn lets you get breaks on not only the hotel rooms, but also what you pay at the convention center, because the convention center is actually run by the Port of Seattle, the same people who run the SeaTac Airport, and where you would go is kind of an interesting fact. So they are tied with the Board of Tourism. So if you can bring in X amount of people to the city of Seattle, then everyone is kind of hand in hand, and this like sort of like domino effect of breaks comes into place. So,
oh, okay.
So unfortunately, we're not at that point yet. Although we have been this year, we're able to like sort of like at least scratch the surface and say like, this is how many nights we had last year, which was our big moving to the convention center. And after this year, if we can prove that, like, depending on how many people we have and, you know, how many hotel nights, then all of a sudden we can be like, no, we put in this many people, and then maybe it eases up our costs for 2010.
Now, is there any way that the common fan can help you prove that? I mean, is there anything they can do when they show up to their hotel? To
walk in with one of those things like they use on stage where it's two dummies hooked up to big poles and be like, well, me and my group are here.
Hey, everyone, look, it's the Jackson 5.
No, but I'm being serious. How can the everyday guy help out?
And that's tough too. Like, you know, what
10?
You do is we try to talk with most of the hotels, and even if they don't offer a rate, try to let people know that they're there for the Emerald City Comic Con, so that post show we can go to the hotel and be like, hey, how many people were there for the show, and then they, you know, they can kind of give us a number. But it's it all lives in this like very like nebulous space of like, you know, are they even going to pay attention? Do they even care? You know, they're like, oh, it's the comic book guy. Whatever. It's like, well, you know, and it's just what you have to deal with. And I mean, I appreciate it, but yeah, it's kind of one of those until we get, you know, like more hotels. Like, you know, this year we have 4 hotels which offer like con rates, so that is a very easy to be like, well, who came in under the con rate? Because that's right. For them, it's very like they've made the reservation under that rate, so that at the end of it, they can just hit print and be like, there you go, you had 600 people or whatever. So.
Cut to April when the hotel manager of the Seattle Grand Hyatt is chasing around a patron who's brought a hooker and an orangutan, and he's just running through the hall screaming, "Emerald City Comic Con!"
Don't talk about Chris like that.
Right turn, slide.
Hey-o! Cut to Jim at the going, "So yes, discount?"
Jim gets
and the bellman just says, "Right turn, Clyde," and the orangutan pops up behind the desk and lays a kiss.
God.
So Jim, we were
Tiger with the timely reference. There you go.
Wow. Jim, we were talking before the podcast during our pre-show. We were discussing Diamond Comics and their new threshold of ordering.
Yeah, I heard it's for it's really like for indie books especially. It's like something. Oh wait, are we talking about like for indie comics being published or for retailers ordering?
No, I don't know about the retailers ordering. What we heard was that they were raising the amount of money a book has to make in order to continue to be listed, which is right around $6,000 worth of retail sales in order to continue to be listed in Diamond.
Which would generate $2,500 in Diamond.
Yeah, and which would generate $2,500, what we like to call Diamond Bucks for the creator.
So that's 40% because that's what they sell it at, right?
Right.
So 40% to Diamond, 60% off, or 20% more for Diamond's cut, and then 40% for the retailer to mark it up.
Well, Dan Votto over at Slave Labor just made a online article about how that was really going to hurt a lot of people. Basically, could very well hurt slave labor, and then we were discussing how that could also affect comic book shops and how that could also affect comic conventions if some of these smaller publishers can't get their books listed in Diamond and therefore can't sell books and things just get really harder for them. And so your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, in a way, like I feel like in a way, and not that I'm happy about it, but in a way it could actually benefit conventions because then conventions become a more lucrative outlet for a smaller publisher because that's a more direct way to reach fans.
Oh, Jim, that is true.
Jim.
Jim.
So Jim, finding the insight that we did not see.
Nice Jimmy question. Deeks.
Jimmy Deem Sausage.
Too far, Dave.
You know why that might be right, Jim? Is because you know, as traditional record stores, physical record stores dried out, more and more bands in the late 90s and 2000s really realized that concerts were the only consistent place where they could make, you know, money on merch and you know, similar sales. So you might be right about that.
Because direct sales at concerts are huge money makers, especially because when you pay $30-$35 for a T-shirt at a concert, what you got to keep in mind is that almost no band is running their own merchandise sales. They're going through a secondary company to run their merch. Even if they're guys who are like traveling with the band to these shows, you find that the markup is like it's $30, only 20 goes to the band and 10 goes to the merch sales, which is why you end up paying $30 for a T-shirt that should not be $30.
Right.
So I'm just saying that in like as relating to obviously like a retail or a publisher wouldn't take their graphic novel that has 1995 printed on the back and sell it at like Emerald City for $30. But what I'm saying is that the being able to sell it directly to the fan benefits, of course, because you don't have to go through Diamond, you don't have to go through all this.
That was one scenario that we had not even considered.
To me, the first thing to that is that, okay, well, that sucks, and it does. So you're going to maybe get, you know, shafted by Diamond, and you're not going to be able to sell as many copies through there, and thus they might delist you, as it were. But at the same time, as a convention organizer, what I hear is that they're looking for another outlet to get these books into the hands of fans, thus being able to say, you know, if they have a web presence already, of course, they can say, so let's use Dan as an example, like at Slave Labor. So he's already got people visiting the Slave Labor website. They're picking up, and I'm just going to use a book that obviously is not going to get delisted, let's say like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. It's like a nice perpetual seller, right? But so let's say all of a sudden Johnny's not selling, and so they have to delist it out of Diamond. He's got this website that people are already visiting to find out more information about this book. He's like, well, you can either order it directly from us, or you can see us at a show. And at this show, not only can you see us, we'll have an exclusive piece of merchandise that you can't get anywhere else. Or we'll have a variant cover, or we'll have the creator. So you can meet this person. And thus, all of a sudden, you have all this value add to a convention that you couldn't have anyways, even if you did go through Diamond.
Well, yeah, you know, that actually leads me to a decision I made this weekend as I'm putting together the Awesomeology, which is this big 600-page thing that as a retailer, you know, is like 2 years late. It's like I won't be satisfied.
I don't want to say anything.
Yeah, no, I won't be satisfied until I met Howard Chaykin, and I love Howard. I met him at the Baltimore Con and in a very funny moment that I won't recount here. But ever since then, we've kind of been in competition, and I'll be goddamned if Howard Chaykin's going to have a hardcover collection that's later than mine, and that American Flag collection took 2 years, so the Awesomeology's taken 3, because I will not have Howard Chaykin beat me at a late book.
Right.
But you know, I was going over my publishing for the year, and I'm looking at how my books sell, and there's a big difference between how things sell in a bookstore and how those same books sell online and how those same books sell at cons. It's almost like the same books have 3 different lives, you know. And so what I'm discovering is, you know, through bookstores, my books sell pretty evenly. And online, they sell pretty evenly. But at cons, book one sells great, and the latest book sells great, and all the middle books always get shipped home. You know? Because the new reader says, hey, I'm new to PvP, where should I start? And I'm like, well, any of the books are great. And they go, all right, I'll take the first one. And then the veteran says, hey, what's up? Oh, I got all these. Is this the new one? Awesome, I'll take the new one.
Right.
So
Scott, just to stop you for 1 second, have I never told you my strategy on that?
No.
Chris or Brad have probably noticed it, but people are like, hey, so which one's the best book to get? Oh, number 2, 3, or 4, always a good one to start with.
Really?
number one is not very strong, and number 5 is not very good either, but 2, 3, and 4 sure are great to jump in on.
I didn't know that.
Always and number 5, it's too new.
Yeah, 5 still has that ethylene smell on it. You know what? You from the printing. You don't want that.
You don't want book 5. You're not going to know what the hell's going on. These fart jokes will be completely out of context. 1, they're drawn so poorly. You're not even.
I think there's moss in it. You don't want that one. You really want.
What is this doing out? You just put it under the table.
Well, like book 3, you know, book 1's cold porridge and book 5's hot porridge, but book 3 is just right. But what I'm thinking about doing is, and I'd like to get your input on a retailer, what I'm going to do, not thinking, so don't try to talk me out of it, Jim, but what I'd like to do is, outside of Image, outside of Diamond, because being with Image I have the luxury of doing this, is I'm going to take a 150, 200 page book, you know, a normal PvP size book, and go through my archives from the beginning till now, and pick out what I feel are like the most important storylines, and put it in a book and say, best of PvP, and just make that my con offering. You know, like, yeah, I'll bring the latest book, and I'll bring the big items, but this is what I can bring to a con that someone can pick up, that the new reader can pick up, and they're not going to be just buying book 1 or book 5, you know. And that is a product designed specifically for conventions, you know.
I think that's pretty pretty interesting, actually. Like, for me, as... Like, okay, so I read PvP on, like, you know, on RSS, right? So I read it every day, it comes up, but bam, like, there it is, right? So when I go to a show, I may not be super into the collections because I'm just kind of, like, talking out a weird scenario, right? So maybe I'm not, like, picking up, like, the volumes as they come out because I've read them online or whatever. So you come up and you're like, hey, and you're like, I have this collection, which is some of the best storylines from PvP all in one, not every single storyline, not every single item. Instead, it's the, like, sort of the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
I think that actually has a lot of really good potential. You know, just sort of thinking about it, is I would be, as a fan, more interested in that, I think, than sort of like, okay, I don't know how many times I can read, you know, like, all the other sort of in-between stuff. Maybe I don't, you know, I'm not as keen, or maybe a huge World of Warcraft fan, so there's, like this section of stuff that I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't really care for the WoW stuff, but instead,
right,
you have, like, just kind of a really interesting, because, I mean, the thing about PvP or any of the other strips is that, you know, that we're talking about here, is that it's all about the interpersonal relationships. You know, you enjoy seeing what's happening to Brent and Jade, or, you know, whatever. Having that all in one collection, you'd be like, oh, you know what, I'll totally pick that up.
Yeah, so...
I love it. I think it's a great idea, man.
Cool. But see, the thing is...
Wait, real quick.
Yeah.
So, now... This is something that you are not soliciting. Instead, you're only having at conventions.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying
available maybe online also. Or?
It'll be available online and at cons, but I think I want to offer this online and at cons first before I solicit it. And I'll be really honest with you, mostly because I just came up with the idea and I'd like to have it in time for your con. And if I don't solicit it, I can. You know what I mean? Because
right.
If I don't solicit it, all I have to do is get it together and get it to a printer and have it made, and I'll have it in time. But if I solicit through Diamond, the soonest I can have it out is 4 months from now.
Correct.
Because correct. I have to give the Diamond their lead time, and then I can't really sell it before retailers get their shot, because that really is unfair to retailers. I mean, I think if you don't solicit a book and then you debut at a con, I don't think retailers get too upset, because you haven't set them up to order these books that they're now going to be stuck with because someone bought them elsewhere.
Right, you haven't undercut them in any
way. Right, but if you print it first, sell it, and then afterwards come to them, they can decide then whether or not they feel there's any demand, and they can make their orders accordingly. So,
right, without any press.
Yeah, so that's the thought.
It's a really ingenious business model, actually. It's kind of a way to sort of capture that middle audience of people who may not want everything, and you still want them to become fans of the book.
Yeah, and it's great for me, because I mean, I've got 10 years worth of crap that I can pick at least 10 good strips from. And
one a year.
One, there was at least one every year. Yeah.
Except for 2003. You're like, no.
Nope.
But if I get to 2003, you know, that was a pretty uneven year. Let's
So are you?
It'd be great though if you get to like, oh, November 15th. Thank God you exist. All right.
I was on fire. Are you feeling any kind of fears with your con, or hell, even the store, with the economy the way it is? Are you feeling comics are recession proof or maybe recession prone?
They're definitely more recession proof than prone. I mean, I did see across the board that our sales at our stores were down versus the previous year, but not as dramatically as I would have expected. Because there's something kind of nice about comics, where the people who are buying them are generally, you know, spending $3 a shot on a comic, and, you know, the occasional trade paperback graphic novel. And so, like, all the guys who have a box, you know, a saver or whatever you call them, like, in various parts of the country, you get your comics every week. Those guys, nobody dropped any books. You know, if they dropped a book, it was just the general, like, oh, the creative team changed, I don't like this book anymore, et cetera. I didn't have any conversations of, like, you know, things are tough, I'm just going to drop my comics, you know?
Yeah.
But what I saw is that sort of the more casual people that show up during the holidays for us were not there, were not as present. So yeah, I don't feel like they're exactly recession-proof, but it's sort of like how a movie can still, like, open at, like, $50 million during, like, these crappy economic times is because entertainment, in a way, is what's recession-proof to varying degrees.
Escapism.
And it's always been like that. You look back at the, you know, to go way back, you look at the Great Depression, the one part of the economy that still did really well was Hollywood. Because they made movies people could go for 2 hours and forget that, you know, pretty much everything else in their life sucked. So
So you're saying, Jim, are you saying we should go into movies then and forget the comic stuff?
Pretty much. I'm thinking it's the moving pictures is the future.
the moving pictures.
The speakies.
Wait a minute, found my bad joke. That was good.
The speakies.
You know, just going back to Diamond just for a minute, because this thought kind of came across my head, and I wanted to see what you guys thought of it. And that is, isn't Diamond cutting their throat by doing this? I mean, didn't we talk about in the podcast last year how what really helped Amazon.com out was the long tail theory, where they don't make money off of books like The Da Vinci Code and those huge books that sell, you know, 3 million copies. What they make their money off of is the 5 million publishers that only sell 2 copies apiece.
Well, the difference between Amazon and the comic book industry is that Amazon can return the books that they don't sell.
Well, that is
right,
true.
Right, the direct market, yeah.
Yeah, and what they're trying to do, like, I mean, in a way, I what's weird about it is that what they're basically doing is having the retailer do quality control, because it's not Diamond itself coming to you saying, and we'll just use, like, any of you guys as an example. Let's say they're saying, oh, okay, Sheldon is not selling X amount of copies, thus we can't carry it anymore. They're not coming to you saying Sheldon is not good enough, it's not a good comic. They're not making a value judgment on the quality of the book. What they're doing is having the retailers make a value judgment on these comics. And they're saying, you know what? If your comic isn't getting people to carry it, to want it, then we don't want it either.
Right.
And that's really, it's kind of like, that's another, like, sort of how I feel, like, what they're doing. And, of course, for them, there's all these probably stuff, of course, that we have no idea about, but, you know, like, they have to spend all this time doing inventory. Like, I know, you know, when you list something through Diamond in the back, and, you know, and by that I mean when you're not a premier retailer, they don't keep stock on hand. And what they have to do is deal with you as an individual and say, okay, you got this many orders, you need to ship them here, you need to do this and that. And if you're doing this for guys who are sending 7 copies and you're spending your day, like, talking to every single one of these dudes who, you know, and did they ship their book on time, and then, you know, that book is late, and this and that, they're like, you know, I don't need the hassle. Thus, if you can't provide a significant amount of copies, or you can't make a significant amount of sales, we don't want to deal with you. Right. And whether that's right or not, of course, that's, you know, that's a complete other argument. But that is sort of how I feel what they're kind of going for.
What I see that leading to, though, eventually, is that you'll never have a sudden and unexpected Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles come up through the market, because you'll never support the small guy in even trying, you know? And so
right.
What'll happen is that younger and smaller companies will...
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Will what, Dave? You're going to make a point. You should freaking make it.
You know, I think you backed out.
Don't leave us hanging.
I don't think he had the guts to fall through.
Let me finish what he's saying.
But no, I get it. Yeah. No, that's interesting, though.
At least they have the web.
Yeah. Well.
Well, no, I think that's what he was going to say, though. Younger comics who are not going to be able to go up through Diamond distribution are going to turn to the web, and that's where they're going to come from. And Diamond's never going to get a chance to participate in that transaction.
They're never
going to get that revenue, because all of it is going to be direct.
Jim, do you ever think that we'll ever get back to a place where we have more than one distributor like it used to be?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be optimistic and be like, you know, yeah. But honestly, I don't see that happening.
But you would like that, wouldn't you?
Everybody would like that, because the problem is that how is Diamond not a monopoly when I have to order from Diamond to get 90% of the comics out there.
Yeah.
You know? So how can I reasonably open a comic book store, you know, and only sell 10% of what's on the market? It's like, oh, sure, you can open a grocery store and you can sell milk, which is great because everybody loves milk. But mm-hmm. you can't sell sour cream, and you can't sell cheese, and you can't sell any other dairy product, just milk.
Yeah.
It's like, well, then I can't really run a business because, you know, and that's, I mean, that's obviously, like, you know, pretty wide analogy, but it's the same kind of thing. Like, I can't open a comic book store tomorrow and deal with only distributors who, you know, deal with everybody but Diamond, or, I'm sorry, everybody but Diamond exclusive retailers. I can't, or publishers, because I can't get Marvel Comics, I can't get DC Comics, or Dark Horse, or Image, or whoever else is exclusive, and I can't vouch exactly that. Like, but I'm pretty sure all four of those are exclusive to Diamond. So it's like, well, great. So who am I going to get? Like, how do you open a comic book store and not carry Spider-Man if you're going to make it a mainstream comic book store, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've always thought, like, you know, this sort of, like, kind of tangentially, like, I always thought of opening, like, you know, it'd be kind of cool to open, like, sort of more of an indie, like, sort of half art gallery, half comic book store. So,
oh, yeah, kind of like Nucleus?
Yeah, or what's that place, the Secret Headquarters down in L.A., you know, which is, like, an awesome art gallery. But even they, like, you know, all they carry, they don't actually carry single comics. They don't carry anything, like, basically with staples, at least last I knew. They just carry, you know, like, Perfect Bound or Square Bound or, you know, graphic novels and trade paperbacks and hardcover. But even those, they carry, like, you know, how is that art gallery not going to want to carry the James Jean Fables, you know, cover collection that just came out?
Oh, right, wait, right.
Well, that's a DC comic. Sorry, guy.
Exactly.
So yeah, but again, like, this sort of, like, you know, in a weird way, seems to benefit people like me in the convention business. Like, you know, so I'm a retailer, of course, but also, you know, on the convention side, like we were saying, all of a sudden it's like, well, now I become an actual real avenue where I'm like, you know, I have potentially 10,000 people that can come by and see your product. And how you get your product in front of those 10,000 people, I mean, is sort of like, that's a you problem in a way, but also, like, you know, you can work with a convention and be like, you know what, I want to advertise, I want to sponsor, I want to do this and that. All of a sudden, everywhere you look, like, you know, this year our sponsors, we have Art Institute of Seattle and Nintendo and a couple others, and it's like, well, so everywhere people are going to look, it's like, oh, I see this logo or I see an ad for them. So in the program book, why don't you have, you know, in the program book, everybody looks at a program guide at a convention. Nobody, like, nobody you've ever talked to at a show is like, oh, I didn't even flip through that thing. It's like, of course you look at the program guide. So why don't you have a big thing in there that's like, come by our table, come by our booth. This is what we have going on. So there's all these kind of ways, and, you know, I'm not, like, sort of soliciting, like, for, like, advertisers or sponsors. What I'm saying is that even if you're just setting up, and you, like, as people are walking by and you hand them a flyer for your webcomic, maybe they don't come by and buy something at the table right then, but then next week or at home when they go through their big old, you know, bag of goodies from the show, they're like, oh, hey, pvponline.com or, you know, F-Chords or, you know, whatever, or Evil Inc., man, I'm going to check these websites out. All of a sudden they subscribe to your RSS and this and that, and then by next year they come back and they're like, dude, oh, you have a collection? This is awesome. I will totally pick this up. Oh, what else do you have? Oh, chainsaw suit. I didn't even see that. I'm going to buy it, et cetera, et cetera. You know?
It's a good buy.
I feel like that's how you make business. Like, you make an investment in the future. So maybe you don't make a sale that second, but giving them that thing potentially pays off in the future. So.
And we've seen that happen at show after show, too. I mean, what you're talking about is not outlandish in the slightest. Where people remember something that they picked up at a convention last year, seek you out the next year, and end up walking away with an arm full of books.
Yeah, if I can chime in 19 years after I lost my connection, one of the best comics.
No, are you joking? That's a joke, right?
You know what? That was deep. I agree with everything Dave said.
Dave, are you joking?
I think it's not a joke.
Oh, my God.
The internet hates Dave.
That is the greatest line of the year so far.
What was awesome was that I actually heard the word comics like desperate and far in the distance.
Oh my God. Unbelievable.
You know what? Don't try to get him back. Let him make his point to the ether. Let him feel good that he got it out.
Get him back in and he just goes, and that's how I feel about it.
Just applaud. Just start clapping.
Well, how long have we been going now? Has it been an hour? Yeah, we've been an hour and 19 minutes. Wow.
Wow.
Wow, time flies.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it's, I don't know, comic book conventions kick ass at the end. Yeah.
Well,
you know, I mean.
We like them.
Yeah, and I'm glad you guys obviously, like, and you know, it's a two-way street, right? Like, you know, I really appreciate your guys' support. You know, you talk about the show and people hear about it here on Webcomics Weekly. They read about it, like, you know, when you post on your blog. And, you know, when you raise awareness for shows like mine, especially, is because, you know, you're actually coming from a point of view where you're like, I had a great time. And it's not like the best advertising, as you guys know, is word of mouth. So when I have guys like you who are like, you know what, we love this show, your fans, you know, there's no, like, this hidden bribe. I'm like, finally, I got Scott Kurtz to mention, you know, my website on his blog. You know, it's great to have you guys be like, you know what, we love your show. And I'm like, well, I love you guys. The end. So.
Well, and that's really mutual, because there are very few shows that are run as well and with as much passion as Emerald City. And you've got we didn't talk about this as much as we should have. Your staff, you're obviously very good. You're obviously very well organized, very thoughtful. But your brother George, and the rest of the guys that you've got running cars and organizing, making sure people are getting to their panels on time, shepherding people back and forth with all of the little details that go into a convention. You have excellent people to delegate to, and then they have an excellent group of people to the volunteers. There are very few volunteers that are as passionate as the Emerald City volunteers. I mean, you really have lightning in a bottle, I think.
Yeah, and I'm incredibly lucky, because, like, my staff is all my friends. Like, every one of my friends, I'm like, you know what? For 2 days, you are slave labor. But they're all, like, a lot of my friends are people I've met through the comic book store, and they're passionate about the industry. So they love it, they love the show as much as I love the show.
Yeah.
And so they come there, and they're just like, what can we do? How do we make this? Like, you know, they come to me after the show, and they're like, you know, here's how I, like, and every single one of them will have a list of stuff and be like, here's what I felt went right, and here's what I felt went wrong, and how do we change that so that that wrong list is, like, shorter and shorter every year until it's just the right list. And, of course, it's never always going to be, like, a right list, but, you know what, and things happen. But generally, these guys love the show, I love them, and it just helps that they're passionate, they're friends, and... You know, I say this all the time, I couldn't be luckier. Like, I work really hard, but honestly, that I have so much good luck and good friends, and it works out pretty well. It's a love fest at the Emerald City Comic Con.
No, it is. It's good stuff. I know it sounds maybe like we're kissing your ass, but I think it's, you know, it's really funny because, I mean, we're all friends. Like Jim, I consider you a really good friend. I mean, listen, I'm moving up there to make your con local for me. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, like, I'm going to be taking a week after the show while I'm up there this year to look for places to live and stuff, and I'm sure we'll hang out. And it's like, I don't know, it's just a good feeling. It's just good to know that you're going to go someplace and get taken care of. And, you know, I mean, not to promote the competition, but I know you probably don't consider them this way because I see you at their shows all the time. But I mean, you get the same kind of vibe from Shelton over at Heroes Con, and from Mark Nathan over at the Baltimore Con. You know, these are guys that love comics and care about their guests.
Yeah,
and I'm really happy that, like, you know, that I'm even mentioned in the same breath as those two guys, because they're like some of the most beloved. Like, I think they're great. They're both, like, you know, I Mark and Shelley over at Baltimore are just like the sweetest people on the planet, and I love Shelton and those guys. Like, all of us together, you know, you can actually see. It's sort of like analogous to the comics you create. Like, there's passion for what you do, and it comes out. So, like, they put together a show that they're passionate about, and they like taking care of people, and so do I, and it just makes for a good show. I don't know. It seems like it shouldn't be as complicated as everybody makes it. Everyone is always like, I don't understand, and like, why doesn't the show do well, and this and that? And it's like, well, you know, when you run it as strictly a business, and you have no emotional attachment to it, that really shows to anybody coming to the show. So.
Mm.
Yeah, and let me mention a couple quick things. So this year at Emerald City, we're doing an art book that is going to benefit the Seattle Children's Hospital. So that'll be a lot of fun. We have Frank Cho did the cover, and it's got like pinups from a bunch of guys who are coming to the show, like Ben Temple Smith. We had kind of put Ben Temple Smith, Tony Harris, Scott Morse, all these had been put together in the last year, and all that will benefit Seattle Children's Hospital. So we're trying to do something for the community outside of, like, we always do stuff for like Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and Hero Initiative because we want to support the industry, but also just because, you know, we really want to do more for the community, and we've been doing more of the stuff that we're doing, this big thing for Seattle Children's Hospital. So these hardcover $25 art books, and we pretty awesome. So just something kind of...
That's awesome.
I just wanted to mention it. I'll be making a formal announcement with, like, you know, art and stuff in the next couple weeks, but, like, so nobody's heard about this except here first.
It's cool.
The book is called Monsters and Dames. Richard Starkings over at Comic Craft actually donated his time to do a logo for the book. Like, it's, you know, it's going to be pretty nice. So,
sweet.
Cover, 48 pages, full color. So that, and we'll have Tim Sales doing another print for us this year, and Mike Mignola just turned in a print also. He did another local landmark we have is called the Fremont Troll. They actually built a troll under a bridge.
Yeah.
In Seattle. So he did a Hellboy at the Fremont Troll.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Man. I'm going to have to get in line first day. I'm going to use my ability to get in early to cheat and get in line so I can get the print and the hardcover book.
It's going to be awesome. So, yeah, man, there you go. This was a ton of fun. Like, I know we're kind of winding down here. So,
listen, let me apologize for Dave's behavior. I mean, that guy is just
it's incredibly rude.
I say,
you know, it's the whole Andy Kaufman-esque kind of pushing it one step too far, and I think you owe Jim an apology, Dave.
You know what? Say what you will, but I commit to a bit.
Say what you will, but
so Dave, let me ask you, like, in your infinite knowledge, exactly how many master's degrees do you have?
Well, Jim, I apologize to you, Jim, for cutting out there. By the way, I don't know what's wrong with Skype on my end. I have a feeling there's something wrong with my AirPort, but we'll see. I'm gonna check that out. But were you serious? You don't want to know that. You don't care.
I care deeply, actually.
You care deeply?
Yeah.
I have two masters, Jim.
Okay.
And as I like to tell my mother, they both qualify me to flip burgers, because one of them is in cartoon propaganda, and the other one is in 18th century cartoons as literature. So, boy, are those useful in the real world. Hey, let me tell you. Helpful.
Nice. Hey, speaking of other shows, are any of you guys going to be out in New York for New York Comic Con?
I will.
And I'm definitely going.
Awesome.
Yeah, Brad and I are sharing a hotel room a couple nights, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to actually be... Koo really wanted me to come out for the panel that he's doing on the business of webcomics, and then that turned into... Well, while you're here, you might as well get some booth space. We can give you a piece, and then it turned into... You know, and now it's just a full blown thing. So yeah, I'll be there.
Sure.
I'm scared.
Awesome. Cool.
Now you're getting married to him in a month. That's what
right. They got to consummate it.
Little bit frightened of the chuds.
What?
Yeah, New York is a scary place. Between the pimps and the chuds, I don't know if I'll make it out of there alive. It's like, you know, listen, because I'm talking to Brad about it. I'm like, well, I'm kind of scared of New York. He's like, you don't need to be scared of New York. It's not like that anymore. I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, look, you just, you pack up your stuff in your suitcase for the con, and then you just point yourself in the right direction. You look at the ground, and then you just walk, and you don't make eye contact with anybody. And I'm like, what? And then I'm waiting for him to go, no, just kidding, it's really a nice place. And then Brad's like, yeah, that's, you'll be fine.
You will. I mean, that's not bad advice. Although looking at the ground isn't, I don't think was a direct quote of what I said. But just the other thing is, jump in a cab. The place is filthy with cabs. You jump in a cab.
Filthy. That's great. It's awesome. I cannot wait to get into a place that's filthy with cabs.
Scott, if you like filth, muggings, and rats that are able to mug you, then you will love New York.
But Scott, you didn't go to New York Comic Con before, did you?
I'm going to get in a cab. Brad's going to be like, you're fine, I'll see you there. And then Brad's going to get there, and the cab's going to pull up, and I'm going to come, and the cab's going to drive away, and when it drives away, it's just me and my underwear.
You can't let them do that to you.
And then it's like, and I go, I got in the cab, and the guy goes, you cartoonist? And I said, yeah, and he goes, give me books. And then Brad's like, well, there's your first mistake. You should never tell me you're a cartoonist.
You don't make eye contact with the cab driver. No.
Yeah.
And then cut to Brad in another cab having a wonderful conversation and just slowly fingering a .45 in his pocket, like just waiting. Just waiting for, if anybody gives him trouble, Brad's ready to go.
He knows the secret city living language to talk to city living folk.
Yeah.
He's not like a suburb guy like me, because I get in and I'm like, so how's your day? And then the guy pulls a gun on me, and Brad gets in and he's like, Darmak and Gillard at Tanagra, you know. And then the cab driver turns around and goes, Shaka, when the walls fell. And then he gets there safe.
Kimba, his arms wide. You know what's funny is that me from Los Angeles, you would think I would know how to handle myself in a big city, but L.A. is so not a pedestrian city that when Brad and I walk together in a city, I'm like walking by going, zippity-doo-dah, hey, homeless guy, how are you? What's that prostitute? It's a sunny day. And Brad is like, stop talking to people. We're going to be killed.
That's true. That is true.
You almost, I just remember when someone came up panhandling once, and I gave the money, and Brad looked at me like I was the dumbest human being alive. Like,
I was ready to hit you. No, you, Dave, I've actually seen you walk up to homeless people and ask them to ask you for money.
The funniest thing is in Baltimore when that couple walks up to us and they go, do you know any place that there's a shelter? Because we walked into some place and said that we wanted to get in the shelter as a couple, and they looked at us like we were monsters. And Chris's face just turns into this emotion, this just like, oh no. And like he sits there and he turns and he's like leaning in like I'm interested. And this is how far Brad gets. Goes, do you guys know where there's a shelter? Because we went to a shelter and they told us. And Brad's like, oh boy. And he's off. Shaking his head, just like, nope, nope. And my choices as I'm standing there are, do I stay with Chris, who's like, tell me your plight? And Brad is walking off going, nope. And so I'm like, fuck it, Brad. And I chase Brad. And when I get up to him, he's already begun the conversation we're going to have. And I'm joining midstream. And he's like, I'm telling you, no shelters turn people away. You don't just walk up to a shelter. They don't turn you away. It's crazy. They're just scamming. They're scam artists, Scott. And that's why you can't, you can't even give them the opening.
Look, hey, guys, I still think that those people were Buddha. So.
Chris, aren't you still right now there talking to them?
They're in my house right now. Yes, I adopted them.
But what's really funny is like Brad. The whole time we're there, Brad's like, "You guys have to stop talking to people, and you have to stop addressing people. You're in the city. You're walking down a major city street. You know, this is not the suburbs. You have to stop addressing people." We're like, "You know what, Brad? We're humans, okay?" And then, almost like we're like the Moses telling us not to worship the golden calf. The next day, it's like a motorcycle gang is coming down, tearing shit up, and Brad's like, "See what happens?" And Chris, tell them we are not exaggerating. It was like the goddamn apple dumpling game from a Disney movie.
You know what would be great though? Is if Brad knew that was the outcome that's coming. So he's like, see? Told ya. And then he slowly takes off his jacket and pulls out this chain with a mace at it on the end of it. He's like, now we gotta do it this way. Good job, guys.
we're being circled by guys on motorcycles.
Yeah, and then Brad starts swinging it and goes, Warriors!
So he's like, this is how we handle it Philly style. And he just puts on the brass knuckles and he's like, all right.
He pulls out the mace with the chain in one hand, and in the other hand, he pulls out this little book that says Book of Catchphrases.
Or he hands you his glasses and he goes, hold these for a second, punches the guy, reaches back for the glasses, put them back on. All right, let's keep going.
and next time, no eye contact.
And everybody else is going,
guys, we're fighting now, so definitely eye contact with your fingers. All right, the rules reverse now that we're fighting. You have to hit them in the eyes, otherwise they will kill you. I know this is counter to what I told you 10 minutes ago.
Stay with me. I know,
well,
this is
tough.
If
Brad or somebody else told me at one point that they were saying that, look, you're making eye contact one, that's your problem, and you've got a Green Lantern shirt on two. They know that you can't fight back. So you're asking for trouble.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing is
they
after...
know that you've never kissed a woman and that you can't fight back.
After all of that happened, the very last night, we all leave the convention center really late, right? Well, we went to some restaurant or something. And we're walking... Oh, yeah, we went to the harbor. And we're walking back, and halfway to my hotel, everyone else is like, well, this is our stop. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then, it was well lit. I mean, it's a main city street. I mean, there's street lights, there's, you know, the traffic lights, there's lights from the businesses, and they're like, well, this is us, you know, and the pub lights spilling out into the street, well, this is our hotel. I'm like, all right, see you guys later. And then everyone leaves, and I look down the other half of the stretch I have to walk to get to my hotel, and it's like Rape Alley. It's like black, and there's no lights, and there's, you know, screams and glass breaking, and I'm like, well, why the I'm just gonna fucking lay down now because they're gonna see me.
Wait. You're saying you were afraid of being raped? Is this
yes.
Well,
listen, Jim, if there's some hoodlum, they know I'm not gonna outrun them. They know I'm not gonna outwalk them.
Yeah, he's easy pickings.
I am easy pickings.
Oh, they know I'm not gonna outwalk them. Is the funniest thing I've ever heard.
And then I get back to the hotel, and I get back, and it's all in my head. You know, like there was nothing wrong at all. People were very friendly. It was all like fucking Mariners fans. And then I'm like, and I get to the hotel, and I'm like, and some girl comes up, and she's like, hey, and I'm like, oh, don't touch me, don't touch me. You know. And then I get up to the bedroom in the hotel, and I shut the doors, and I turn all the lights on, and I blaze the TV up high on, like, Full House that's playing on Nick at Night, and then I just go to sleep with all the lights on. And then I wake up at 4 in the morning, and Chris has not shown up, and he's not answering his cell phone, and I'm like, what do? Do I call Brad? He's probably home by now, but it's 4 a.m., and he's got kids. Chris is probably dead somewhere. He probably got stabbed on the way back, and I'm like, I'm texting Chris. I'm like, oh, okay. So I start to get dressed, like, I guess I gotta go look for him. I mean, it's gonna be light soon. I gotta go find him. We've got a flight at 11 a.m. And finally, Chris texts me. And he's like, "What is your fucking deal? I'm drinking downstairs in the lobby. You need to chill."
That's right.
And
I was
take
in
a
the
nap.
Lobby.
Yeah, it's like take
well,
a nap.
Well, you know what, though? To be honest, though, I just narrowly avoided getting stabbed because we went on a hike to find alcohol, and there was nowhere that was open, and we ended up walking through the alley that you're describing.
Yes.
But this was Baltimore.
Where the two guys, it was at Rape Fog, and those two guys were like old men with one tooth each, were whittling. Like they share a tooth between them, and it's like they're just whittling sticks into sharper sticks going, fine night for a rape. Yep, nice rape mist coming in. I think I stole that whole bit from you, Chris.
Yeah, that was the Rape Alley bit.
Rape Alley, yeah. But anyway, that's in Baltimore. So don't go to the Baltimore Con. Definitely go to Seattle where everything's awesome and Starbucky. What's the worst that's going to happen in Seattle? Some kid's going to jump you and try to feed you granola. And it's going to rain, right?
Probably. Like I was gonna be like, yeah, it doesn't rain that much, but you know what? It probably will.
I was in the shuttle to go to the hotel, and I'm like, so it's overcast. And the guy's like, yeah, I don't know why. People always complain about it raining, but I haven't noticed that here. It's always sunny when I'm here. I mean, sometimes it rains. And I was like, I have never been to Seattle when it was not overcast and raining.
Really? That's so funny because I always am there when it's nice. Because, like, the last time I was there in October, You know, I'm always there during the summer or maybe during the con season, and it's bright and it's sunny, and so I'm there in October, and like it's like my fourth day there, and I've got another 4 or 5 days, and I'm having a great time, and we're driving, and it's a quiet moment, and Mike Krahulik goes, he points up and he goes, "So you gonna be able to handle this all the time?" And I'm looking around, I'm like, I'm looking for helicopters, like, "Whoa, what are you talking about?" And he goes, "You know, this, the overcast." And I go, "Oh, yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that." And he's like, "Well, you know, it's been that way the whole time you're here. It'll be that way the whole time you're here. You know, there's no sun. There will be no sun. And it's this way a lot. Are you able to handle that?" And I look up, and it starts to really, like, my neck starts to tighten. I'm like, "Well, now I'm not okay with it. Like, where is the sun?" And then for, like, 2 or 3 days, I'm like, "Certainly the sun's come out since I've been here, and I've just not noticed it." And he's like, "No." And so for, like, 1 or 2 whole days, I'm like, "I will see the sun. Obviously the clouds will break at some point." And it's like, "No, there is no sun. It never comes out. What will I do?" But
and then the one time that the sun comes out, you hear a kid next to you going, "Mommy, there's a golden orb in the sky. What is it? Does it portend our death?"
There's actually, it's really funny because I brought this up to Mike and he didn't know the reference and you guys won't either. But there was a science fiction
I know the reference
story. Really, Chris, you do? About the kids that lived on Jupiter where it always rained.
Yeah, they live there, and the sun only comes, like, once every 10 years, and then the classmates lock one kid in the closet.
Yeah, and he misses the one day of the year that there's sun.
Yeah.
Oh, wow! Yeah. Wow!
So Seattle, basically, like, we have this, like, diffuse light the whole time you're here, like, because it's coming through the clouds. Like, well, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't rain and we don't have sun, but, like, generally what you get is, like, that perfect, like, it's always sort of, like, weirdly just, like, bright, but when you look up in the sky, all you see is gray.
Yeah.
So the sun is always kind of being diffused through the clouds. That's what you get a lot in Seattle. I actually really like it in Seattle, but, like, I understand also that, like, people get really depressed, and, like, I think we still have one of the highest suicide rates in the country.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny, because I asked Koo and Amber about that, and Amber said that, because Amber's not from Seattle, but Amber said that there's actually a place where you can go and, like, spend 15 minutes standing in front of lights that are, they're not tanning lights, they're just, like, natural sunlight lights.
Yeah.
And then I asked Koo, and he's like, "I don't know, I've lived here my whole life, I never noticed it." He goes, "I tell you one thing, though, you do appreciate sunny days. When they do come out, you go outside, you don't go, fuck it."
Mm. Yeah, exactly. When it actually, like, you know, brightens up here, you are just like, bam, we are out. We're going outside. We're doing something.
I was talking to my dad about it. Chris will get a kick out of this because you know my dad and you can assign his voice in your head. And I'm like, I told him that story just now, the same one. And I said, "So I don't know. What if I get there and I don't like there's no sun?" And he's like, "Yeah, how'd your life be any different than it is now? When are you ever out in the sun? You're inside drawing comics and you're in a car driving to somewhere else to draw comics. Then you're back. When are you going to miss the sun in World of Warcraft?" And that's when I punched him in the stomach until he bled out of his mouth.
Oh.
Yeah, your dad had it coming.
He did. That's why I want to tell you that story, because I know you like stories where I punch my dad.
I'm still laughing at the outwalking somebody jokes from like 10 minutes ago.
I can outrun him. I can outwalk him. Hey, I just... Yeah, when just thinking about having to outrun someone just makes me tired. I just want to sit down.
I got to log into World of Warcraft. Okay, I'm fine.
I challenge you to a arena team fight. 2v2.
All right. I think
what I was going to say, fellas, is I've got a scoot. Is it okay?
No, yeah. We're done. We've talked it out.
Well, let's end it this way. Emerald City Comic Con, April 4th and 5th, Washington Convention Center. We're all going to be there. Jim's going to be there. And we're hoping to see you guys.
Do we have a table like last time, Jim?
You guys have an end cap, so you each have a full 8-foot table. You guys are right. You're next to Penny Arcade. I think on the other side is, once again, the Questionable Content crew.
Woot!
So a pretty similar setup. We expanded our show floor this year. We're actually across the Sky Bridge.
Oh, cool.
So we're 95,000 square feet this year rather than 80,000 that we were last year.
Wow.
And
damn.
We'll be doing I'm pretty sure we'll be doing a webcomics panel with these four. So, you know, I hope to see everyone listening there.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, we're all going to stop recording, and this will be the end of Webcomics Weekly, but don't hang up, Jim, because I need to find out who's drawing the cover of the program.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate having
thanks
me
thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Sure. And just remember, everybody, EmeraldCityComicCon.com is the URL, and it's April 4th and 5th, 2009.
Yeah, and watch our sites. We'll be linking to it.
Hey, everyone. It's Scott Kurtz. At this point in the podcast, everybody started talking about some respective events that were coming up that have already passed since this podcast was recorded. So I cut that part out of the show. But I just wanted to say that the Emerald City Comic Con is a great show. We will be there in April. And also to let you guys know that we're going to be more regular with these podcasts. It was a fantastic year in 2008 for Webcomics Weekly. 2009 is looking to be even better. So hang in there. We're all trying to get our businesses all squared away for 2009, and we're sorry the podcasts have been late, but don't worry. They're coming. They're coming on a regular basis, and we love doing them. Be sure to check out webcomics.com for a bunch of posts every week about more of this kind of stuff that you hear on the podcast. And thanks for listening.